You are listening to the Punk News Podcast, episode 389. Welcome to the Punk News Podcast. My name is Adam White. Safely holed away in my basement in Niagara Falls, Ontario. Joining me on the show this evening, the old people. Well, I mean, like, relatively, given our five or six people that ever participate in the show. But the oldest combination.
You're saying just my presence adds that much age that they were the old lineup.
The math works, Tom. Don't question it.
There's a pretty good swing between me and Ricky, especially me and Sean, but still.
That is Mr. Tom Trauma in somewhere near Grand Rapids, Michigan.
That's right.
Yeah, there you go.
Sitting in my den, my lair.
In your wood panel walled den. There's something about
my
den.
Secret lair with my daughter sitting behind me on the couch reading a book on her laptop.
Oh, God, that would make me incredibly self-conscious.
She's got headphones in. They always have headphones in.
Oh, yeah, I guess.
Good luck trying to get those kids to come to dinner, Adam, in a few years.
Well, they don't eat the food right now anyway, so it won't be too much of a difference.
You have to text them to tell them it's time to come to dinner.
Well, we all be like augmented reality at that point. Like just this like glowing avatar of my head just appears in their peripheral vision. And it's just like, hey,
here's the real question.
Or maybe just screw them. They can make their own dinner.
Here's the real question. Between us three and Liverpool Neil and Neil from the UK, will anyone else get that Max Headroom reference at all listening to this program?
I have no interest in any of these computer generated realities, be they augmented or virtual. Like, I don't give a shit. I've never had a single urge to put on a, you know, VR helmet or try any of that crap. And everyone keeps talking about how it's going to be the future of everything. And I have no interest in it at all, except I am very interested in having myself digitized into some sort of badly polygoned, like Max Headroom style head that I can intrude upon my children to yell at them.
Even like after death.
Oh God. Yeah. I mean, that's going to be my legacy.
Especially after death.
They're like, how do we delete this? And they're like, we don't know. We don't even know where it's installed.
I meant Rich from the UK. Rich from the UK.
Isn't Liverpool in the UK too, John? Are you being repetitive?
Liverpool, Neil. I think you have to be.
I'm surprised. I was not that old when that show was on. I'm surprised you guys know what it is at all. You had only been very, very little when that was on.
I know of the lore of Max Headroom because if you are a person in tech, it is sort of legendary. And for no other reason than I think I know about it more because of there was a TV station at like in LA or somewhere that was hacked years ago and like random stuff was injected over their feed, and it was like some Max Headroom shit that they piped into there.
Perhaps they should check out a certain otherwise seemingly innocent Canadian who has some desire to live in perpetuity as Max Headroom.
Yes. Anyways, but to clarify, the frequent letter writer, Liverpool Neil.
It was not me.
Liverpool Neil, our frequent letter writer, his secret shame is that he actually lives in the United States now. And
he lives in Chicago or something, doesn't he?
Rich from the UK is our frequent communicating owner of dogs and children who really I think is our greatest fan. I'm just gonna put it out there. Well, actually, our greatest fan is that guy that gave me $5 on PayPal once, and then Rich in the UK. So, anyways, the other voice that you hear is Mr. John Gentile, out in.
Hello, Adam. That was my Max Headroom impression.
See, I'm not.
Just sound like you were having a stroke or something.
Oh, I'm gonna guess.
Like, you know how he would like glitch and say the first letter like four times in a row.
I wonder if you could. I'm sure you can find that somewhere deep in the interwebs, kids. Check it out, Max Headroom.
Dude, Max Headroom rules, man.
It was on for like two seasons. It was literally a flash in the pan. It was very, but I do remember watching it.
This is the old person podcast.
Yes.
So we got a if you wanted to rate this Newsweek, John, on a scale of like you know, 1 to 10, 10 being something happened and 1 being pretty boring, like where do we lie?
We're lying at 3. Feel free to talk about Max Headroom at leisure with no sense of urgency whatsoever.
So if any of you our dear listeners decides that like you're running out of space on your iPod there and you really gotta catch up on my brother and me or something like that, you can delete this one. Can I tell them that?
Adam, stop telling people not to listen to the podcast, Adam.
Yeah, Adam, just because we don't have any structure to it doesn't mean it won't turn out to be a winner. It might be the best thing ever. A lot of times, when we just riff loosely, I think those are the best shows.
It is pretty punk rock to tell people not to listen to our product. That's one thing I like about Punk News is like so many websites are like, we've heard your concerns and we're addressing them. And at Punk News, when people complain, we're like, oh yeah, fuck you. We're doing it four times as much now. You know what I mean?
That's your new strategy. It's like, oh, people don't like my story about the Melvins? Well, it's Melvins week, bitch. And then all of a sudden you just keep going. Oh God. All right. What are we going to talk about this week, John?
This week, let's just take it easy. Feel like the Commodores, easy on a Sunday afternoon. Let's talk about record collecting. We often talk about record collecting with Tricky Ricky, but we got Tom Trauma here. He's a record collector. He collects records, CDs, like myself, and tapes as well. Tom Trauma. Tom, did I ever send you the tapes that I need to send you?
I'll PM you my address again.
I'll send you some tapes. Anyway, Tom Trauma, what cool finds have you gotten recently?
Well, I got a pretty cool. Wait a second. I'm leaning away. Leaning back. Okay. I just got a cool box of records from our good friends at Pirates Press.
Adam, how come everyone's sending people all these boxes of records? I don't get jack shit.
It's your magnetic personality, Josh.
I've reviewed thousands of records.
I know.
I've never gotten anything.
And I love
you and listen, Ricky. A 7-inch.
Yeah. Well, I love Pirates Press records, honestly, and I do intend to cover more of their stuff because I love the classic style of punk and oi that they put out. And I honestly think that's pretty underrepresented at Punk News because we have so many young people who are like huge emo and whatever other soft rock bullshit. So I actually would like to cover more of this stuff. So I got the new LP from Roadside Bombs, Rise Up. I got the new LP from the Templars. I have the new 10-inch self-titled from This Means War. Lars Fredriksson in the Bastards, Live and Loud.
They sent you that for free?
Yes.
I bought that and they sent that to you for free.
A French band called Crim. And a double LP from the Old Firm Casuals called For the Love of It All. And Saturday, I was at a little festival, and I picked up, I think it's self-titled, but I'm not sure, an album from a real cool punk oi band from Indiana called the Bare Knuckle Hooligans. So I'm always buying stuff, guys, always. At shows especially, and mail ordering. So, yeah, I'm constantly adding records. I have a backup order right now from Interpunk that I'm trying to patiently wait for.
I'm so pissed off. Well, anyway, that's a cool find, Tom.
It's just all great, like street punk, oi, classic. I've been going through it. There's a couple 7-inches too, but I don't know what I did with them. I'm always buying 7-inches. They're actually my favorite things to buy.
That's what I was just about to voice.
And, you know, I got a review that I'm going to send in here, and I won't even necessarily mention what the band is, but I want to talk about this phenomenon with you guys since you're record collectors. So you order 3 records from a small label, right? 2-3 records, whatever. And you open it up and there's an extra 7-inch in there. Is that the greatest thing ever? And am I the only one who actually fixates on the one thing I didn't order? I have these like 3 new records that I know I'm going to love that I've been waiting for and really want to listen to. But the first thing I want to get into is that free one they sent me. There's always something intriguing, whether it's a CD or 7-inch or an LP or whatever. Is that just me or you guys get that too?
I have gotten free stuff, and honestly, I'm not trying to be cute. That's the thing I check out the least, and I'm the opposite.
For some reason, I get fixated on that free thing that I've probably never heard of, and always listen to that before I listen to the records that I know I'm going to like. Maybe it's the element of surprise or something. I guess I should start buying like those mystery packs where you just pay $50 and they send you like 6 random LPs or something. But no, all right. I guess it's just me. I figured that was like a universal phenomenon. So
no, yeah. Actually, I'm quite enamored with that. You actually, as you were explaining that and how enamored you were in it, Skype completely cut out. So I'm like, man, I hope Tom is still talking because we'd really let people know that this is all just bailed together. But so I had ordered an LP back in, I don't know, like November or December from a label, and it didn't show up for like a good while. And I'm usually pretty good about not being the person that's going to immediately complain that, you know, the mail order is late, because I don't really expect a lot of these, you know, tiny ass labels that I'm going to order stuff from are, you know, necessarily a full-time operation or anything like that. But it got to be like a long ass time, and I was super patient. And then finally I was just like, I'm sorry, man, but I gotta, like, this is not arrived, and we've been back and forth once or twice, and it's just gone. So the guy was really apologetic, and he's like, oh, hold on, I'll put something else in the mail. I don't know why it didn't go through. You know, confirm my address and all that. And then when the record showed up, he had not, it wasn't like extra 7 inches. He had stuck 2 LPs in there that I had not requested, which was a lot, which is amazing. And like, there were LPs that like the guy didn't even have for sale anymore. So it was just like
old stock or whatever, but still, I know.
Which is great. It's just, yeah.
It's awesome. Now I'm irritated again, because I start thinking about, I'm a big fan of this band from Florida called the Pink Lincolns. They haven't been around for about 15 or 18 years. And they reissued, supposedly, their second album, which is virtually impossible to get. It was on a small German label. And I ordered it, and it was supposed to come out the 19th of January. And there's the other 3 things I ordered are sitting in a box waiting to go. And I can't get the one freaking, the label's tied up, or I don't know what. But now I'm irritated. I need to get the Pink Lincolns Headache album.
Well, listen to this. I'm going to add, I had a similar experience this week. There's a very rare Circle Jerks record called Circle Jerks Live at Spin Magazine. And it's actually a promo-only release from like 1985. It's very expensive. Someone released a bootleg called like Circle Jerks Live in Long Beach or something. And on Amazon, I saw there was a CD version of that. I'm like, a CD version? I knew the bootleg vinyl, but I didn't know the bootleg CD. So I ordered it off Amazon. It said, you're supposed to get it by January 25. February 6 rolls around, I still hadn't got it. I ran the tracking, and it said, there's no tracking info for this, even though they sent me a tracking code. I sent them an email. I'm like, yo, could you just ship it out? And they said to me, oh, tracking says it was undeliverable as addressed. And I'm like, what are you talking about? It says it wasn't ever mailed out. What do you mean undeliverable? And they're like, oh, we'll just refund your money. So be careful.
But I don't want a refund. I want the freaking record.
I think the CD that doesn't even exist. I think it's some kind of a scam. Because I knew the record exists, but I've never seen the CD anywhere except for on Amazon. And it didn't even have a picture. You know, and so I think it's like a scam that just some bot does it. And, you know, if you order it and don't complain, they keep your money. If you order and complain, they just refund your money back to you.
I know that Amazon can find my house, because I swear we get a freaking box from them every day. But once again, another problem.
Actually, I meant to bring Adam. I apologize. I meant to bring this up before record collecting. Adam, you threw a show this past Friday, your first show. How did it go? Let us all in on the news.
Yeah, it was really fun. It was a totally different, like a different vibe and a different like level of ambition than your summer soiree there. And I want to make sure that I don't try to compare the two, because like it is such a it was such like a different thing. And what I mean by that is that, John, the Summer Soiree was a majestic piece of choreography and planning and like vision that you brought to fruition, right? Like you had a fucking plan, and you set out, right? And you had made that happen. This was a really different kind of show for us, because it was a it was almost like a show in concept more than it was in we knew we wanted to put on a show. Me and Mel K, the Toronto PR dude, basically Fat Records Canada is what she's been for a number of years. She's been on the podcast before. So me and Mel had done some work together in the past year. And we're like, we should start doing some shows together. So that sort of became like, let's do one in February in the winter when it sucks. And, you know, people will want to come to a show. And for a while, like that was sort of the plan, was like, we're going to do a show. And we like up until like literally like the last few weeks before it even happened, did not have like really like what bands confirmed that we were going to be on it or like what the total plan was or anything like that. So there was like a good chance it wasn't even going to happen because we had to make sure we had like a lineup confirmed and everything. And it was so ramshackle in that sense compared to John's fucking meticulous, you know, yeah, I don't want to blow too much smoke up your ass there, but like your level of plan, your level of planning is great, right? So,
well, John is so obviously of the so go
we,
big
we didn't
or go
do a lot
home
of the things that you had done just sort of out of necessity. So, like, we didn't bother like pre-selling any tickets or anything like that, and that meant that we were running what was really much more, I think, like a show that like, you know, when normal people who aren't John Gentile put on a punk show. You know, it was probably a lot more like that. Like, you know, hey, we'll see how much money we have at the end of the night and we'll count it up and hopefully give some to the bands kind of thing, right? Like it was, as opposed to, John, I don't want to tell people too much about your process, but you had sold out that, your soiree show, right? So you had the fucking checks cut and those bands walked in the door and they had their money in hand before, you know, before a single person walked in the door. Like it was incredibly professional. So not that we were unprofessional, but we were definitely more like in the, let's throw a punk show in this bar and hopefully people come.
Kick ass.
Well, and the traditional payment for punk bands is a wad of sweaty small bills. I've been paid that way many times. I mean, that's the preferred method, I think.
Well, that was funny because so we got to the end of the night, and I'll get into the show in a sec. But we got to the end of the night, and like me and Mel kind of like squirreled away into the back of the bar that we were in, and the bar they wanted to run the door, so they gave us like, you know, they gave us our numbers and, you know, our pile of cash kind of thing, and we sat there and we're like, all right, how much are we giving to each of these people? And we divided it up and this and that, and you know, I wandered around and like basically like, you know, gave stacks of money to the various, you know, band leader people. And in my head, like coming from like my business world, I'm like, wow, this isn't really a lot of money. I feel really shitty, right? But then all the bands were like, fuck yeah, some money. It was like, oh, okay. And they're like, yeah, we're used to playing for zero money. So any money is cool. And I was like, oh, all right, well, here's any money. So that's nice. Yeah. So we, it was a cool crowd actually when we figured out what the kind of vibe was. So we were at the Bovine Sex Club in Toronto, which is like a, you know, lives up to its name in that it is like in
there's people cows, having sex with cows.
No, so the Bovine, if you see it from the street, has no sign on the outside doors. There's just like a bunch of garbage that they have welded to a wall, like pieces of bicycle and shopping cart and wires and stuff like that, and some Christmas lights and this and that. And it's all just sort of like on the wall. So if you aren't aware that like this is this kind of like crazy rock and roll bar, it probably scares people. And I remember I used to walk by the Bovine when I was a kid, and it was super creepy to me because it was just like, what is this place? Like it looks, it had this like, just like industrial grossness to the outside of it. Because again, there's no sign. It's right next to like two, you know, otherwise respectable establishments that have, you know, windows and signage and doors and things like that. Right. So it's just like this junk heap. So you go in, and then when you're inside the Bovine, it that kind of carries through. Place is covered in band stickers, like top to bottom. There's like car parts, like pieces of fenders and trunks and stuff like that are like all over the walls. There's like pieces of dolls, like old children's dolls hanging from the ceiling everywhere. Like lights haphazardly strewn all over the place. Like it is super rock and roll in the Bovine. And what was really wild for me before the show started was like just kind of like sitting there with Mel and, you know, and the bartender as she's cutting limes and the bands are sound checking. And we're just hanging out in here. And I'm like, it's just weird just like being in here when it's not on, you know, like when it's not acting as this intimidating rock club. And we're just, you know, sitting around as you're, you know, cutting limes. So the venue was super cool for that reason. When we opened the doors, like we had no idea what was going to go on. Because like, again, we didn't pre-sell tickets, so we had no idea what was going to show up. We were doing it a lineup that was, you know, led by a couple bands that like were veterans, like the median age of the last two bands on the bill was over 40. Like these were bands that were been around for a while.
Oh my gosh. They might as well right? just lay down their graves and die.
Yeah, I know, right? Like who how dare they? Right. But the, you know, so a couple old dude bands, the one opening band that was there was this band from Montreal called Bolo Mojo that was coming in to do their first show. Their first show in Toronto ever. And like, so they have no profile in the city. So while they're young, they're certainly not going to be a draw. Right. So we're like, we don't know if anyone is going to come to this show. Like we could just be us sitting here all night long with the bands. But you know, it was a little bit slow as the pickup started, but then, you know, I turn around at one point and the room's fucking full of people and I'm nice. Like, oh, hey, all right. Like I'm sure by the standards of like shows that are like total blowouts at this place, it wasn't full of people. But at a certain point I'm like, I have to push through people to get from where I'm standing to the bar. And that is my,
how big a place are we talking about, Adam? Are we talking a couple hundred or a few hundred or 100? I mean, how big a room are we talking about?
You know what? You probably, I wonder if this is information. Hold on, let me see. I'm going to Google it.
What if Adam was like 12,000, you know, not that many.
I mean, we didn't have
I mean, a couple
more than,
hundred, right?
We you could probably, the capacity of this place is probably like a couple hundred people. And we were, you know, we weren't that high, but, you know, there were people in there, which was great. And so
it was a respectable turnout.
Yeah. You know what? And I feel that like, you know, at the end of the night, we were able to give all the band's money, and you know, it looked like the bar was busy, and that's sort of what I wanted. So everyone was great. Jen Fiorentino, who opened, was just doing like a solo acoustic act, but she was really super good. And while the room wasn't like at all full when she was playing, like everyone was just completely zoned in because she was pretty captivating and like really good with what she was doing. Bolo Mojo was super fun. Like two kind of like weird facts about this Montreal band. One is that the lead singer is related to the late Dave Gregg of DOA and the Real McKenzies he played in after a while. So he has a sort of like family connection to the DOA world there. And two, they have a keyboard player, and the keyboard player had one arm, and it was super awesome because
that's cool.
He decided that the best way to kind of like play like a rock and punk rock keyboard with one arm is to take off your shoes, hook one foot like into the stand that the keyboard is on, and he used his other foot on like a pedal, but the foot that was hooked into the stand he used to basically like pivot the stand wildly around as he was playing. It was really fascinating. It was like, this dude is making it work with being like the one arm punk rock keyboard player. So that was cool. The Exploders were the next band. They were a band that was back in the 90s in Toronto, they had a reputation of being like a sleazy, loud, raunchy garage rock band, like sleazy to the point where it was like controversial. If you look at a lot of like any of the interviews that sort of survive onto the internet from that era. And so they got back together just recently, after being, you know, basically apart for most of the 2000s, but like people showed up for the Exploders and they had like a great time, and they were, they were definitely like the main magnet. Like everyone sort of showed up for the Exploders, and while they stuck around after, like that was when everything, you know, the energy sort of peaked. Was like, you know, that was it. That was the moment that people really wanted to be there for. And that was really cool. And then the lucky ones from St. Catharines went on and played, and they played like this big, long street punky set that, you know, people were moshing around to, and it was fun. But the cool thing for me was just getting to, I feel that like everyone I talked to that was in the room was someone that like I wanted to talk to, like was someone that, you know, they would introduce who they are, and I'd be like, oh, I'm aware of your thing. And then we'd have like a cool conversation about like, you know, what band they're in or what project they had going on or whatever. We managed to, we somehow inexplicably for our lack of planning, we scored like a beer sponsorship before the event happened. So there's a brewery up in Ottawa area called Bose. And so Bose was like a beer sponsor for it. So they basically, what that means is that they gave us like, you know, X cases of beer to give to the bands. So that's, you know, the bands kind of like had all their drinks covered by the brewery. And there was a guy from Bose in Toronto that books like a lot of their events and stuff like that. And they do like tons of, you know, punk rock events and things like that, and like concerts and stuff. And this guy came by, and it was like, there are a lot of these people. I met them when they were the baby, like, you know, shit, I listened up, you know, I was a punk news reader in the '90s or whatever. And the '90s doesn't make sense, but you know, in the early 2000s, I was like an early punk news reader. And then we'd get to talking about like what they got going on. And like, you know, it was fun. It was cool for that reason. So, you know, much similar to our show, we sort of walked out the door at the end of the day going like, no one died. Right. You know, like
nice,
somehow no one died. And you know, and then you run away before the whole place, you know, inexplicably bursts into flames at the end. So that was good. I mean, like looking at how this thing worked, I would love to try something like this with the same sort of like planning that you had go into yours, because you had sort of like the anchor act, right? So you knew, you know, we're going to do a World Inferno show and we're going to build everything around that and pre-sell tickets. And we know they're the draw in the area, right? Like to do something right, like that, where you're a little bit more like you're more assured about your numbers, then you could go and you could kind of do more wacky event stuff. Because when we first started talking about this, one of the things that Mel really liked was what you had done with the Summer Soiree. And she's like, we should do stuff like that. Like we should do more kind of like crazy event shows. And our problem was that we almost initially started talking about like, well, you know, what kind of crazy merch and giveaways and things can we do, right? And it was like, well, hold on. Like we should probably, if we're going to do that, if we're going to go through the expense and the effort of like being able to put together this giant wacky spectacle, we should make sure there's like a couple anchor bands that are like built in that we know are going to pull in people to be able to support that. And like to speak no slight about the bands that we had playing, but they were all like smaller regional acts and definitely not the thing that you would go get like 100 t-shirts printed for a show for. Right. So we had to, you know, keep our expectations in check with sort of the kind of show we were doing. But then we walked away from it and I'm like, Mel, you know, I almost, like in retrospect, I kind of prefer that we did this as like a lower key, like it's like a punk show. Like we did this like a punk show for our, like our first time doing any kind of show organizing together. That sort of feels right, given our history and like how much, you know, Mel and I have worked together on various punk news things for like 16, 17 years. I'm like, I kind of like the idea that we just like, we did that. Right. And she's like, she's like, you know, we're all heart and no flash. I'm like, yeah, I like that. That works. Right. So yeah, I mean, it really positive experience for me. I mean, I came away feeling great that we did something. And it's nice just to do something after kind of like so many years of being a consumer of things. So, you know, doing that was neat. So Yeah, onward and upward. We got to figure out kind of like what the next thing is and how we start to expand out from here. But yeah, it was a cool experience. It was really fun.
Well, congrats, man. That's great. I'm glad it turned out well, and that's great that it was a success.
I'm happy you did not lose your Canadian ass, Adam. Cool.
No, but no one wanted to hear about that. Everyone wanted to hear about this 7-inch I bought, right?
Yes.
That's way more important than no. That's my story. That's what I got to say. I'm very happy that like, also side note to this. So the Bovine is covered in stickers, top to bottom, right? Stickers everywhere, all over the bathrooms, all over the roof, anything that's like a pipe or an exposed wall has got band stickers all over it. I am now the proud owner of a 100 some party stickers for my stupid little newsletter. And I made sure that there was one of those like affixed in a really cool part of the Bovine before I left the room. I'm like, I don't care if this show works or not. I just want to make sure I leave here with like my shit stuck to the wall. So that was really the important thing.
Did you go for the urinal stick where you place it inside the urinal?
I thought about this for a while I was in there, and I'm like, do I do the bathroom thing? And I almost thought about like, okay, I kind of wanted to get it like on the roof of the men's room, but I was a little bit self-conscious that I'm a short person. So my efforts to get it onto the roof of the men's room was going to draw attention to me when someone else walked in there to piss. So I ended up not doing that and then ended up sticking it on the wall near the bar. But in any case, that's the real victory, is that
it's always cool, dude, when I go to Chicago or Detroit or something for a show and I see a sticker from like a local band that I'm friendly with here in Grand Rapids. I love that. So if I'm in the Bovine Sex Club and I see that, I'm going to totally take a picture of it or something.
Mm-hmm. You should. So anywho.
I mean, and plus, if you would have tried to put it on the ceiling, like you could have potentially fallen down on the like
yeah.
floor.
How'd your show go?
The Bovine Sex Club. And I'm going to assume that the floor is not necessarily somewhere you want to spend a lot of time at that club, but maybe I'm wrong.
Oh, man. But yeah, you know what? I mean, the fact that we did the Bovine is really cool to me. I mean, it's not... A big part of this is that, like, Toronto is not my city. So I'm never sure what... Like, I don't know what's cool in Toronto anymore. And I don't really know the vibe and, like, the time frame for how people do stuff there. So, like, so to me, like, the Bovine was, like, a big deal. Like, it was a big punk rock club, and I think it, like, still is, right? But, like, if you were a...
I see the name a lot, so that means...
Yeah, like, but if you were, like,
on their tours, yeah.
But if you were, like, a really hip, up-and-coming band, you probably don't play the Bovine because you're probably too hip, right? There's, like... More indie rocky.
That's like
places.
Where the Day Glow Abortions play when they play.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Like, totally. Like, it's that kind of place, right? But the other thing that I really don't know about Toronto is, although I have an inkling for it, and it sort of was borne out by this show, is that there's a weird time thing that happens there where compared to, like, so, like, if there's a show that I go to in the Niagara area, that show is generally over. It's over by midnight. Like the last band is going on at 11, right? Now that it's even earlier in Chicago, right? Or in Chicago, in Philly, right, John? Because there was like a noise curfew.
Yeah, Philly's brutal. Depending on what block, literally what block you're at, it's either 10 or 11 o'clock.
Right.
So
that's kind of cool, though. Actually, you can go home and get to bed.
I know. As an old person, it's amazing. But in Toronto, and this fucks me up all the time because I don't mind the hour and 40 minute drive or whatever in and out of Toronto. Like I can do it.
Oh, it's that far. Oh, yeah,
like,
but a long way at 2 o'clock in the morning.
That's the thing. All their shows start super fucking late. Right. So like, and we had to adjust to that. Like our headliner didn't go on until, after midnight, but that's very normal for it. Like
that's pretty
so
typical.
People don't show up for stuff there until like, after 10 in some cases, depending on who the openers are.
And that was a Saturday night, right?
Yeah. Right.
I mean, that's pretty typical, honestly, around here. And, Grand Rapids is hardly Chicago or Detroit, but 10 o'clock is pretty standard start time on a weekend. And that's like four bands,
Yeah. And like, I'm like, I can't do that. Like, that's really, that is a very tired night for me. And, but the other thing is that like, there's this other thing that I've become aware of that I haven't that I wasn't aware was a thing. But like, depending on like how late of a show you're playing in Toronto, it's not often the best to be the last band that plays, because people will take off to get on to the TTC, the Toronto Transit, right? To get on the streetcars or whatever before the streetcars close. So if you're going to run your show super late, people are going to start to bail because they got to get across town and they want to get on the transit before the transit closes. So there's all these like weird factors to how like the rhythm of how people go to things in Toronto, where it's like the shows are late, but you don't want to be too late depending on how transit works on that given day. And those are all, you know, that's like moon person culture for me, because that's not how it works down here. So, you know, it's interesting to have to like start to think about those things and be like, wait a minute, like, how does the city actually mechanically work? So, yeah.
Hmm. Well, we're very glad it went well for you.
Yeah, it was cool. So I don't know. So how does this show that we're doing right now work? So Tom talked about some records. I talked about a show. What are we doing, John?
Well, you can talk about records too if you want, Adam.
Do I want to talk about records? I don't know.
Well, I'll talk about records, and you can think if you want to talk about records. So listen, man, Discogs, everybody loves it. I love Discogs, although I'm starting to turn just slightly. I used to love eBay. I used to sell and buy stuff on eBay all the time, sell more of it. But I had to stop selling stuff on eBay, because eBay went from it's an auction, if you win it, that's it, to it's an auction, if you win it, but it's not just – well, eBay, you always had to describe it accurately, but then it was, if you described a record as very good, not mint, if the person got it and it wasn't mint, they could return it. Now eBay literally is, if someone buys it and decides they don't want it, they can return it. Literally, like you can just say, oh, I don't feel like I want it anymore, and return it. So eBay sucks ass now. Discogs was awesome. I started selling stuff on Discogs from 2010 through now. 2010 through 2016, I sold a ton of records. I didn't have a single problem. In 2017, I had 8 problems. And the problems I had is people would buy stuff and say, oh, well, it's not a mint record, but it's because you bought a VG or even a fair record. You know, or I have people like saying, oh, the record doesn't play right, when I play tested the record and I know it plays right. So Discogs itself is cool, but I feel the buyers on Discogs are absorbing that eBay mentality, that Walmart mentality, that Target mentality, which is real bad. And I don't know what I'm going to do. The point being, though, is Discogs is cool because I recently got 2 really cool scores off Discogs. The first thing that I got is this weird little cassette by Integrity. It's called Integrity. It's got a terrible title. It's called The Scar of a Woman, and it's terrible name. Basically, what it is, it's 4 or 5 tracks that they recorded for their first album. It's slightly different versions from before their first album, and they made it to give out to people. It's ultra rare, made by the band in like 1989. This is a very, very expensive cassette, but I did not pay a lot of money for it. I got what I call the Too Punk For You bonus, in that this guy – well, basically, the guy made an error. It had the cassette had never sold before on Discogs. It had sold before on eBay for very high prices, but on Discogs, it had not sold before. So the guy put it up for – I think he put it up for $9 or $12, and he put it's really mint, but because of the content, I'm going to make it – very good. Integrity's a joke. And for like $12, this very expensive, rare cassette, like I snatched it as soon as it was put up. I snatched it right away. And I'm like, well, his Too Cool For Schoolness is my game. You know what I mean? Like some sellers, and this is great about punk sellers, is if they think the music is bad, they don't even worry about and the music is great, mind you, but they don't even worry about the value of the record. They put their own subjective value on it. My favorite story is when I was at 924 Gilman's punk record swap, a guy had all original press, Bon Scott era, AC/DC, Australian press versions of the albums with the different cover art and the different track listings. And he had them in there with like Pat Benatar albums and stuff. And I'm like, oh, how much for these AC/DC records? And the guy was like, AC/DC? I don't know, $3 each? And I was like, yoink, sold. Those are very expensive records. So punk sellers are great in that they're too cool for a lot of stuff. And if you're a true music fan like myself, that's – That's the greatest nest to pick from, let me tell you. Second thing I got was really cool. This was just a lucky snatch. I got it off Discogs as well. I got the Dwarves We Kill Cockthrobbin cassette. What that is that's the Dwarves demo cassette that the band made to try to get signed to a record label, and they only gave those two record labels. The one I got was the one given to Gerald Cosley at Matador Records, who then gave it to the guy I bought it from, who sold it to me. And so this is a really cool piece of Dwarves history. It's basically the Dwarves demo tape they tried to get signed. And it's got unique recordings to it, which is pretty cool. But you shouldn't buy only records online. You got to go to the physical record store, because that's where you usually get the best gems and the craziest finds. And also, we like physical record stores. Physical records, there's just something special about a physical record store. My favorite thing about a physical record store is you might buy something that you didn't even know exist or that you didn't really think about, but there it is. It looks cool. You snatch it up. I got something really cool at Jupiter Records down in Wilmington. Jupiter Records, on their Facebook, they'll post what records are going to be for sale that weekend, which is bad. I try to avoid it. But a couple of weeks ago, they posted Black Sabbath's first album, Misprint Edition. The A-side was Black Sabbath 1, the first Black Sabbath album. The B-side, and the jacket was Black Sabbath 1. The B-side was the B-side from Paranoid, but it was listed as Black Sabbath 1's B-side. How crazy is that? And they only wanted $15 for it. And I think they might have priced that a little too low. We'll see. I'm still deciding what I want to do with it. But this record is so rare. I went online, and it's not listed online except for in some old chat forums where people are talking about, oh, I've heard about this weird Black Sabbath misprint. Has anybody ever heard of it? And a lot of that stuff, Tom, you'll recall from like the 90s, is just like not true. But there it was. So I get down there an hour early before the store opens to be the first in line.
Just on a random record store.
I call them dad buyers, like line up, except for they're usually not dads. And they're usually like kind of rude, and they'll like elbow you and, you know, like push past you. And they're just rude, you know, rude over a record, which is ridiculous. But I'm like, you know what? I want this Black Sabbath mispress. So I got there an hour early, and I actually brought a book with me. So I went there, and it gets to opening time. Nobody's there. The owner walks past me. I'm there reading the book. I'm like, I've come to your Black Sabbath record. And he's like, I guessed. And I walk in, and I just pick it up. I couldn't believe that no one was there for this really weird, obscure, bizarre Black Sabbath record. But now I've got it, and it's all mine.
Nice. That's pretty cool. Yeah,
John, I can't top that.
That's weird, isn't it? It's a Black Sabbath record with different records on each side. So, however, I do have to admit now, I am approaching an area I don't think I want to approach. That is, dude hanging around in a record store before it opens on Saturday morning.
Yeah, not even like
artists. Well, you're not just trying to be cool at that point. You just
you've given up.
You're just comfortably being who you are at that point. There's no.
Here's a question, John. Did you wear jeans?
At the very least, not like a like an offensive creature. Otherwise, your punctuality.
Like I said,
a physically offensive creature. I think that you can totally lean into that.
To me, it's all about whether or not.
What is it? We discussed this briefly before. What is it with like hardcore? I actually don't see this as much as I used to. In the 90s and early 2000s, I would see this all the time, like record collector with like terrible, terrible BO. Have you guys noticed that less? Because I believe I've noticed it less.
Maybe it's just
normal people.
Like record collector who doesn't own a pants with zipper or button.
Right.
That's what I was going to add. I had my microphone muted, but I was yelling at you. Were you wearing regular pants or were you wearing sweatpants?
What is up with that?
I don't know. I think, it's just, maybe mom doesn't buy them pants anymore and they have to buy their own pants. And they have
been left at 45? Yes.
For our UK listeners, we call trousers pants.
That'd be very helpful.
I could feel their... They're outraged confusion. At that whole sentence that you were espousing there. Oh God, I don't have any cool record stories. It's like I went to a sale, I bought some. They're here. That's not interesting. So whatever. Let's continue. Are we gonna we gonna play a song or do any more mail or anything crazy before we?
Yeah, we'll do mail next week. You can reach that podcast at punknews.org. Somebody play a song.
You know.
Okay.
Go ahead. I was saying I always play mine last, but I'll go first. I don't care.
Go ahead, Tom. Yeah.
All right. In my tradition of trying to expose my favorite Michigan bands to the world, I'm going to play a band that I stumbled upon that was around years and years ago and has been playing again semi-regularly. They're from the Detroit area. They're called Suburban Delinquents, and their new EP is really good, and it's called Dead and Gone. So I'm going to play the title track from that that new EP. So this is Suburban Delinquents doing Dead and Gone.
All my friends are dead and gone. So made up or just moved on, and I'm just so alone forever.
Stories that happened this past week, and oddly, rarely one of the stories features Fugazi, which is not a normal kind of thing. So there is a band called John. You want to pronounce this here?
I think they're named after that CD compilation, that bootleg CD compilation series, Mystetics.
The Mystetics. So this includes Brendan Canty and bassist Joe Lally of Fugazi, along with a guitarist named Anthony Pirog. Is they pronounce that? Pirog?
Yeah, I'd say Pirog.
P-I-R-O-G, Pirog. If anyone's looking it up. So they have a debut album that is coming out on March 23rd on Discord Records. There is a single that you can go check out over at NPR. So this is basically the the rhythm section of Fugazi, and they've got together with this young guitarist who is I think I read that someone was describing him as like an avant jazz guitarist almost. Like this is not a punk band per se. Like this is he's a pretty accomplished and technical guitar player. So they've gone and they've put together this band called The Mesthetics that, at least going by the song that's available right now, which is called Serpent Tongue, appears to be an instrumental rock band. Does that compote with everyone's understanding of this?
Indeed.
So
I didn't know if there was going to be words or not. I was hoping there would be some words.
There's no words, Tom.
Ugh.
I mean, like,
then it's just noodling.
Well, you're.
Well, it's basically Rush. I don't know if you guys listen. It sounds a lot like Rush with maybe some punk texture applied to it, but it's a lot like Rush. You know, complex power chords, a lot of fancy fret work, and then just, you know, burn.
I don't know, John. I don't think it was that complicated as Rush. I thought more like later day Black Flag, or, you know, just that jammy.
The band referenced in the NPR article was King Crimson. So, you know, different end of the prog spectrum than Rush maybe. But in any case, so there is this instrumental rock band. It includes Fugazi's rhythm section. That is slightly more Fugazi news than we ever get. The last Fugazi story that I remember anyone seeing was
grasping at Fugazi straws.
Well, I mean, like it is certain.
They had a musical or something. Wasn't there a musical or something?
Yeah, there was like, I'll frequently see on like in the punk Reddit world, something like, guy was at a basketball game or something. And there's like a photo of him sitting in the crowd. And I'm like, that's not news. That's stalking. So, hey, that's slightly more Fugazi news than you did. I mean, it's cool that Discord seems to be putting this out, and it is at a Discord project, and it is, you know, within the wider sort of Fugazi family of bands and things that are going on. So that, you know, it's at least cool that it's in the family. So this is a 9-song record that is coming out. Any more details on this that I want to give people?
The question is, are we surprised that Ian's not involved in this? Guy who lives in Italy, or was it Brendan who lived in Italy? I think Guy lived in Italy or still does. So the question is, I wonder if they asked Ian to be involved in this, and I wonder if maybe Ian wanted to be involved, but he couldn't because then Guy would feel.
Does he pronounce it like the French Guy?
Ian pronounces it as Guy.
I assume that Ian would know how to pronounce it. So, all right.
I just watched Salad Days, and they were pronouncing it as Guy.
Oh, fuck. I reflexively will pronounce things as Guy because, the French Canadian thing, but, I've always just read that in my mind as Guy because I'm just like, well, you know, there's no French anything in the States. So what do I know? Okay, continue.
Well, he's married to Kathy Wilcox of Bikini Kill, and they live in Brooklyn. Wow, that's creepy. That's online. So I guess he doesn't live in Italy. I don't know, man. Like I wonder.
Little Italy, maybe? New York.
Well, one of them lived in Italy. I think maybe it was Joe Lally lived in Italy. But anyway, the point being is, you know, Fugazi always took such, I would say, almost ghoulish pride in that we're not broken up, we're on hiatus, you know? And I wonder, like, if two of the guys are jammed together and they live in the same city as one of the other guy, and the other guy lives up in Brooklyn, like, why don't they get together and do something, you know? I guess because I don't feel like it. I don't know.
I wonder if there's a certain weight of expectations on Fugazi where you are, you know, if you're a band with that kind of following, that kind of stature, you can't just, you know, hang out and, you know, dick around in your jam space because there's going to be way too much like expectations lumped on you doing anything. Like, I wonder if that is a big part of it.
So they're scared?
Well, they're scared, but just that there's... It's not something that they can do casually, right? Like, you can't just, like... They can't just hang out, play together, you know, and then, you know, go do a show. Because, like, if they go do a show, it's going to be a giant fucking deal. So, you know, if you can't do anything but a giant fucking deal, and you're the kind of band that is, like, sort of, like that is antithetical to your whole ethos, is, like, you do not want to be a big spectacle. Like, you want everything to be kind of, like, cool and you know, and cheap and honest and authentic and all that stuff. Well, like, you can't have both. So I wonder if they just do neither.
But there are ways, and listen, we're speculating on top of speculating here. I mean, who knows what's really going on? But I mean, we discussed it before. Like Fugazi could just show up and play a show randomly and then say that was their reunion, you know? Like, the point being is they take so much pride in saying we're all still friends with each other and we're not broken up. But then it seems like at least some people want to play together. So why aren't all people playing together? You know, that's just pure speculation on my part. I don't know.
John, you should just be the one to make it happen.
I'll do it.
If Riot Fest can't offer enough money, I'm sure John Gentile can.
Ah, but I see, that's the trick. I won't offer them money. I will offer them punks points.
Do the same as everyone else. You get 5 of the $7 cover. Go straight to you.
I'm mad at Ian McKay. Well, we'll discuss this more next week. But I'm throwing a show next week, and you listeners will have already read about this by now. I'm throwing a show in April, and man, the Ian McKay $5 mindset has really made it difficult to promote a show. I mean, like, really, you know, it's like, oh my god, like, Fugazi didn't do $5 shows because that's all it costs for a regular band. Fugazi did $5 shows because they had 1,000 people show up and they could afford to do it that way. You know, it's like, Ian, good intention, but like everything you do, Ian, from Straight Edge to $5 shows, Maniacs take it off the deep end and ruin it for everybody else.
Unforeseen consequences, everything he does. Yeah.
Well, speaking of the opposite of $5 shows, the Misfits.
Yeah.
You know, I just realized, we've talked about this last week, the Misfits are playing in New Jersey, and I just realized today I'm paying more to see the Misfits than I paid to see Roger Waters do The Wall in 2010, which is kind of insane.
And those tickets were crazy expensive, too.
Well, actually, I bought $70 tickets for that, but I was sad I did. Because it was an amazing show, but I do wish I had better seats for that. Like, that Roger Waters does The Wall show was amazing. It was one of the neatest things I've ever seen.
It was $100. They played our arena here, and it was $100, and I didn't go. I've seen him before do some of it, but I never saw him do the whole thing. I just didn't have the money.
Well, I hear you. Like I thought the puppets were like 20 feet tall. The puppets are like 80 feet tall. And just to see these 80-foot tall creatures lift up the wall, like the blocks, and build the wall while Roger Waters is playing. And then the airplane flies over the audience and smashes down the wall. Like, and the wall itself is like 100 feet tall. It is crazy. Crazy.
Well, I'm gonna buy some of those leftover props at his garage sale, and I can reenact
like a Simpsons thing.
Yeah, I can reenact it in my pig. I bought that at Pink Floyd's garage sale. Yes.
So anyway, just briefly, even though the Misfits show was sold out, after it was sold out, they announced a third opening act. In addition to Murphy's Law and Suicidal Tendencies, the opening act will be Harley Flanagan. And what's fitting about Harley Flanagan opening for the Misfits is that if you bought Harley Flanagan's recent autobiography, which is very interesting and very good, that they asked him to drum on the Earth AD sessions, but he didn't because he wanted to start the Cro-Mags, and which he regrets a great deal. So it's an interesting, I guess, you know, it's an interesting comeback around, if you will, to have Harley playing with the Misfits again. I hope they have him drum on a couple of tunes for the Misfits. That'd be pretty cool. But anyway, so this is just cool. I'm excited. And it's they didn't have to do this because it's already sold out. So it's nice they put a little icing on the cake, if you will.
Yeah, that's going to be fun. I mean, it's in a freaking basketball arena, which kind of sucks, but it should be fun.
$100 for the cheapo tickets, Tom. $100.
I saw like nosebleeds were like $50, but did you get seats? No, or you, because general is like $250, right?
No, yeah, I got the cheapest ones there was. We discussed this last week, and that like I almost spent $300 for the Rolling Stones like 5 or 6 years ago.
Yeah.
And I felt like so dumb, like I felt like a jackass.
Yeah, because you're still talking about 3 or 4 hours of your life.
Yeah, and right. It's like, am I so desperate to see Mick Jagger? I have to give him $300 just to see him, you know? So I said, I really want to go. I'll buy the cheapest tickets there are, $70, $66 plus, you know, Ticketmaster's insane service fees, $100.
No, I feel you, dude. My young daughter is pushing me to take her to see Fall Out Boy, and I'm like, all right, but we're getting the cheapest tickets.
Yeah,
like $30.
Yeah, what's it? Yeah, take her. Don't be miserable, old man, Tom.
Well,
my dad did take me to see Fall Out Boy. I hate it.
People do. Certain readers do love it when I savage certain bands. So maybe.
You see, I'm thinking about that, and I wonder if like a cool way to deal with that. And I don't know if this works for your life, John, or anything, or Tom. But if you're like, yeah, I'll take you to that, but I'm going to be high as fuck, so you're going to drive, right?
Well, she does drive, so I. But the problem is, it's at the arena. I mean, it would cost me $100 to get drunk. You know,
you show up drunk.
Yeah, there you go. Get all the way up.
All right, well, I have nothing to add to Harley Flanagan here.
No, that's cool though. I mean, Murphy's Law is great. Suicidal is great. I haven't seen Harley, but I'm sure he's great. It's going to be an awesome show. I think, you know, are they stacking the lineup so that when they only play an hour, you feel like you got your money's worth? Is that where it's
Yes, because they don't have about an hour's worth of songs. You know what I mean?
Oh, yeah. You know, actually, you're right, because I remember I had this, like, a burned CD that I put, like, both the collections and Walk Among Us on, and it all fit, like, an 80-minute
CD. Right, you know. Good point, though. You're exactly. That's why they're doing this. You're exactly.
But that's
right.
But that's cool, though. You know, I think it's fitting. I mean, I think all the bands fit. I just think it's. I think it's good. I think it's awesome for Murphy's Law because they're awesome dudes. But they play for, you know, 100 to 200 people when they tour on their own.
I saw them play for 30 people, and you.
Yeah, I would say when they played in Lansing last year, I doubt there was 100 people there. Super great dudes, though. Jimmy's kind of my doppelganger, so.
Do you think he's still going to get wasted and, like, smoke joints and, like, drink a whole thing of Jack Daniels, dude, throughout the set?
I mean, even less than 100 people, you know, he's still passing around, like, a bottle of Jägermeister. So there's a – that we had a little piece about the I Hate God Cro-Mags tour coming up, and the one in Chicago closest to me, Murphy's Law is going to be on the bill, too. I might have to make the drive over there, but I don't have any over 21 friends, I don't think, to split the cost with me. And FYPM from Cleveland's going to be there too. It's a sweet show. Anyway,
that is a good show.
Mm-hmm. But it's 21 plus. I can't even like be a bad dad and bring one of my kids with me.
Get a fake ID for one of your kids.
My oldest son's old enough to probably get away with that, but he's not much of a music buff. What were we talking about?
What we're talking about is the World Inferno Misfits, Friendship John, Society. Misfits. So that band is recording a new album. So there was an interview that the band did with My Central Jersey. And in that interview, Mr. Jack Terracloth of the band, he revealed that they're in the middle of recording a new album. They revealed that in addition to having already recorded several studio sessions, they're still writing new material. So Terracloth is quoted saying, "We recorded like 30 songs for it and changed the name a dozen times. Alternative Tentacles is a little annoyed by that. Not much, though. Jello is a mellow fellow. We're moving into Sandinista territory at the moment. Just last week, we holed up in the studio to concentrate on doing some fixes and mixing, but ended up writing a new song instead. Good problem to have." So this is going to be the follow-up to This Packed Funeral that came out in 2014. Wow. Okay. I thought it was more recent than that. 2014. So John.
Adam.
Where's your mind at?
Well, one thing that's great about World Inferno is all their albums have a very unique identity. My all time favorite is Red Eyed Soul, but you can't repeat that. So, you know, they came back with Anarchy in the Ecstasy, which was kind of like a quieter, almost acoustic record, not fully acoustic, but and after that they had the Anarchy. I mean, they had This Packed Funeral, which was almost like an opera or a play, which I dug a whole lot. Of course, the punk one is just the best party. I'm loving the idea that they're going to do a Sandinista type record, double disc, a lot of weird stuff. I think that's exactly what they need to do. However, that being said, you can just write that off because what I've learned within, I don't know, 10 years of knowing Jack Tycloth now, don't listen to anything he says because it's usually not true. You know what I mean? Like, so I believe in that they're recording a new album, but as to what it's going to sound like and if we'll get a Sandinista type record, who knows? Who knows? But I'm excited for it. World Inferno rules.
Any thoughts on this one, Tom? You World Inferno guy?
You know, I am not into World Inferno. We've
you suck, Tom.
It's just not my thing, man. I don't know. It's not for me. I'll accept my suckiness.
Well, I'm excited to hear this. I mean, anything that is Sandinista-like, that is...
Oh, God, that just doubles down on me not caring about it, I gotta tell you.
I mean, yeah, I, as much affinity as I have for Sandinista in my life, that is not necessarily a good thing, so we'll have to wait and see.
I think Inferno could pull it off. Don't you agree that World Inferno has the potential to pull it off?
Well, yeah, but their shit's fairly eclectic anyways. So them going into Sandinista territory, yeah, I mean, their normal could be Sandinista territory for a more conventional band. So that might mean that Sandinista territory for World Inferno might be just an uncohesive pile of noodling. So I don't know. We'll have to wait and see.
Just like a dog barking over a single tom.
I hope they have Mikey Dredd do an entire side with them. That'd be pretty cool.
Make it happen, John. If anybody can make a connection, yeah, it's you.
Yeah. We got
a lot of shit for you to do.
That would be impressive.
Coming out of this episode, you got to reunite Fugazi. You have to. You have to get
Mikey Dredd back
from the dead, and then guest starring on a single side of a World Inferno record. There's a lot for you to do.
I would also like you to get John Joseph and Harley Flanagan to reunite. If you could do that for me, John.
I know a guy that tried to do that, and that ain't happening.
Stabbed.
One party's willing, the other party is definitely not willing.
Gotcha. We don't talk about anybody getting stabbed on the show because we don't want to get stabbed, Tom. That's how it works.
That's New York hardcore, man. New York hardcore. If somebody give a problem, somebody you stab them.
All right, who's playing a song here? Is it me? It's gonna be me.
Give it a shot, Adam. Give it a spin.
All right, so there's a band out of Windsor, Ontario, not too far from where.
Not too far from you,
out there in Michigan world. So this band is called Psychic Void. They just released a full length called Terminal Vacation, and I'm really into this. It's super cool. It finds this like this sort of mean middle ground between like psych rock and early hardcore. So it's like there's like 8 songs on this thing, and it's like kind of like spacey reverb-y, you know, like garage psych vocals on top of Black Flag riffs. So it's neat. It's really neat. I like it a lot. So I'm going to play a song from that. I'm going to play the title track. So this is Terminal Vacation from Psychic Void out of Windsor. Here you go.
Just the way.
right, we're back. This next story is one that we felt compelled to put in our list of things to talk about because people care, but no one on this show cares. And I know people hate that, and they write in, and they're like, why do you talk about shit that you don't care about? And I don't know. I mean, it's because you dummies keep buying this stuff instead of buying Psychic Void records. So, Weezer has announced the Black Album. That's all we know. They did an interview on an Australian radio station, and Rivers said that their next album is going to come out on May 25th, and it is going to revisit their color theme, and it is going to be the Black Album. And that's what's going on. So I don't know. Well, Weezer's gearing up right now to tour with the reunited Pixies in the summer. And that's all anybody knows about the Black Album. No one knows what it sounds like or anything like that, but whatever. So everyone, I mean, the punk news commenters always care and they always want to talk about Weezer. And it does not bear mentioning that at one point, like, Weezer may have been important to someone on this podcast, but those days have passed. So anywho, Weezer making a record.
Well, I think they're raising their fans' expectations by making it a colored album again. And the fans are going to get jerked around. It's inevitable. This Pixies Weezer tour, boy, talk about seeing bands when they're still in their prime, huh? It's called the Who Gives a Shit About the 90s tour. I don't know. I don't know. I have a real affinity for the Pixies, but Weezer's not for me.
I went and saw the Pixies play when they first reunited.
With Kim Deal or no?
I think Kim. Yeah, it was with Kim. I'm pretty sure it was with Kim.
You're pretty sure. You're pretty sure, Adam. Either it was or it wasn't.
I thought they reunited with Kim Shattuck.
Oh, I don't know. I saw them too, and I enjoyed it for the most part. But yeah, they're not.
It was a while ago. I don't remember too much about it except that it was in a giant Air Force hangar kind of hall, which I'm not used to seeing a band in, and they played both the fast and slow versions of Wave of Mutilation, which was, you know, that's all anyone wants. Mm. So anywho,
play your biggest hit twice.
They played the surf version and they played the normal version, and I was like, that was kind of cool. Sure. I don't know, like this was like right, like remember they had a single that they released called like Bamfwalk or something like that, and it was like their first thing that they released after they got back together. It was like right around that time that I saw them, but that's all I remember about it. Yeah. All right. So, anyways, there's a Weezer album coming out. Some of you people care. Whatever. But you're wrong. Because here's what I wanted to talk about this. Because here's what you should be interested in instead. So Holly Cook has released a new record. So Holly was a member of the Slits in the latter day of the Slits and is actually the daughter of Paul Cook of the Sex Pistols. So she's released a new album. It's called Vessel of Love. You can check it out now, along with a tribute that she wrote to Ari Up. And everyone's can have their own opinion of this, but it's super good. I think it's super good.
Yes.
And
I thought it was a snooze fest.
Oh, really?
Yeah. I mean, it's not bad. It's just not. It's not something I would listen to.
It's no Weezer, but
well,
but what
if
is?
I had
what
to
is?
Listen to Weezer or that, I would. I don't know. I don't know what I'd listen to. It just. I mean, it was fine. It was just like I said. It was a little bit too laid back for my taste.
Well, see, I listened to these songs right after reading a Weezer story that I was uninspired about, and I was thinking to myself, I'm like, God, like if only, I'm sure that like that Holly doesn't sell, not maybe in the UK, but like in the rest of the world, that she's probably has a pretty niche audience, being kind of like a like what do you describe this as, John? It's kind of like.
I would call it retro reggae.
Which I'm sure has an audience, but doesn't have like a Weezer audience, right? And I'm wondering if like, if all these dummies who are going to like spend all this money on the next Weezer record that is going to, you know, be some incredibly dumb single that's buoying up a record that people are going to argue about the qualities of otherwise. Like if they could take a fraction of that audience and give it to someone like Holly Cook, then the world would be better.
I agree. I thought this was very good retro reggae. You know, a lot of retro music is just kind of pandering and boring. I thought Holly brought the internal spirit of the music to it, and I thought this was a very good, enjoyable release. And I would definitely – I bet you live she's really good. I was surprised that nobody complained about this article, honestly.
Maybe nobody listened to it.
I thought people were going to be like, that's not punk. And I would have been like, she was in the Slits. That's not punk enough for you.
She was in the Slits, and she's Paul Cook's daughter, so it's at least punk adjacent.
It's more punk adjacent than Weezer.
Yes.
Yeah, I don't think Weezer ever qualified as punk, other than maybe as some kind of a way out gateway band for somebody. But if Weezer is your punk gateway, you still have to walk through another long ass field and another gate to get to punk.
And at that gate.
And at that gate, the other side.
Yes. No, I was gonna say at that gate is Tom Trauma.
And at the other. And at the other side of that gate is like Blink-182, unfortunately. Oh, shit. I'm slapping.
I don't want to reference like Hard Times articles that I find funny, because I'm sure that's not interesting listening for anyone on here. But there was one that they posted the other day that just had this like picture of like some snooty looking punk guy in like a punk jacket with his arms crossed. And the headline was something like, "Oh, you like punk, eh? Well, name all the bands." And there was something about that where I was like, I love that. I don't know why. Anywho.
How amusing.
So yeah, Holly Cook, it's fun. I mean, it's kind of like got this cool, chill vibe to it. I guess retro is a good word for it, in that like there's a lot about modern reggae that I don't like. In that I'm not a fan of all of the sort of like electronic production stuff that they've sort of incorporated in from like the hip hop world. And I would much rather listen to stuff that seems to have more of like a natural instrumentation to it, like this does. And this was kind of lovely. Speaking of lovely, Handsome Dick Manitoba was arrested for domestic assault. So this is something that just came up today. So according to the New York Daily News, there was an incident earlier this week in which the Dick Manitoba of the Dictators was arrested for domestic assault. He was charged with crimes related to allegedly choking his 51-year-old ex-girlfriend, Zoe Hansen. Hansen and Manitoba have a teenage son together. Now he faces 3 counts of third-degree assault and 1 count each of criminal obstruction of breathing or blood circulation and second-degree harassment. So he's due in court on March 26th in Manhattan. John, the charges that are on this list seem very specific and real, and not in the realm of the usual.
Nick Oliveri is attacked by SWAT team, and no one knows what's going on.
Yeah, like it's not. These aren't fun crimes, right? Like these.
Oh, I
like,
see what you're saying. Well, that's not funny.
They're not funny, but they seem like actual and specific. Like we hear a lot of things about. Well, especially with all the Me Too stuff happening right now, like we hear a lot of stuff about like this or that band member, you know, has been accused of this, and this or that band member, you know, is coming to terms with, you know, some part of their past coming up, but it's usually coming up in the public square, and it's usually not resulting in criminal charges or anything like that. This is totally like criminal obstruction of breathing or blood circulation. Like that is a specific charge. So this, I mean, in my mind, that doesn't look great for Mr.
Well,
Dick
I'm sure most of the other situations, the stuff is just as bad. This just happens to be a lot more detailed. Maybe that's kind of bringing it home for you, you know?
Yeah. So, I mean, are you guys Dictators fans? Do you have any thought about?
I'm a huge Dictator fan, this is a bummer, you know. This is a bummer.
Listen, he's innocent until proven guilty, but it doesn't look good.
Don't look good. Handsome Dick kind of likes to. Well, for some reason, like after the 80s, in the 90s, and the 2000s, he kind of became like a biker kind of guy for some reason. Like, I don't know why he did that, but
they recently changed the name of the band to.
Well, that's because
Manitoba, because he doesn't have the rights and.
The songwriter for all the Dictator songs is a guy called Andy Chernoff, but the singer is Handsome Dick Manitoba. Well, and they hate each other. They've been suing each other for the past 10 years.
Every story about him is like, his bar is going to close. Or, you know what I mean? It's like all bad. Hey, listen, the only thing I can say about Dick Manitoba is at least he's still got his looks. That was a deadpan. You guys, Fluff, you guys flabbergasted. I love it.
We'll leave that. So, I mean, I don't want to make light of his crimes or anything by making fun of his beautiful looks. But yeah, that's a story.
It's the old thing. Do you separate the art from the artist? You know, and the question is, we've all sort of collectively agreed that there is a statute of limitations. Like, did Lou Reed do shitty stuff in 1971? Yes, but because it was 1971, we kind of like, you know, sweep it under the rug.
This is a guy
doing bad stuff right now, you know.
How about in this case, like, all his best albums are 40 years old and separated from his modern day crimes?
Yeah.
Well, I mean, this dictators.
That was all 70s. You know,
this did. This came up very recently because with Marky Smith of the Fall, who died like a week ago, 2 weeks ago.
You know,
he was one of these people that he was charged with assaulting his girlfriend in on stage. And what was it? It was like the night.
I don't believe it was on stage. I believe it was in their apartment.
I thought it was
Manhattan.
On stage, but in any case, but like, when was it? It was like the
It was the night. It was like 98, something like that. 97, 96, something like that.
Oh no. Okay. Sorry. Here's the actual thing. Here. So they had this disastrous U.S. tour, and the tour ended with Smith unplugging amps during the songs and lashing out at the other members, leading to Burns, one of the other band members, trying to physically shove him off stage. This led to the departure of the bassist in 19 years and the guitarist. Okay, and then the following day he was arrested and charged with assaulting the keyboard player there. So, okay, so it was precipitated by this sort of like on-stage blowout, but the actual assault happens in a hotel.
I don't know why people let Marky Smith get away with such shenanigans. Like, he was famously a huge asshole.
His quotes are priceless, though.
I know, but as long as he's good quote, you know. But I just think The Fall is like a boring band. It's just like some guy like ranting over top of like a droning guitar line.
That's,
you know,
probably post-punk.
I'm not
Sometimes
a Fall fan.
Way post-punk, right?
Yeah, two posts from me. I just don't know why people, like, I am curious as to why people let him get away with such shenanigans, why other guys got cut down for less severe shenanigans. And I'm not saying that they should have gotten away with it or whatever. I'm just saying, why did Mark Smith get such a free pass? He was, I don't know, man.
This is going to sound like the strangest comparison. It's sort of the Donald Trump thing, right? Well, it is, right? Like, Trump could literally, like, he could drop his pants.
You could say, I hate
and
black
like,
people.
Take a huge dump on the Prime Minister of Japan's desk or something like that, and it would lose him no support, and the news would talk about it for like intensely for 45 minutes, and then he'd tweet something stupid about a football player, and then everyone would move on. And like,
well, but 80% of the country already thinks he's a joke. I mean, 20% of people will.
Right. But he has such like this like consistent history of doing something outrageous that when he does the next thing outrageous, you're just like, yeah, like Trump keeps on trumping, like he's just doing what he does, right? And you know, you may not like it, but like you understand that like that's what the dude does, and you know, what do you, you know, he's somehow avoided real consequence until this point, so he's probably going to avoid real consequence on this. So you have someone like Marky Smith, where, you know, he sort of builds this persona over the years of just being, you know, an intolerable, difficult artiste who just burns through band members, right? It was like 40 people were in The Fall at one point or other, right? Like, just, you know, just completely intolerable as a human being to deal with, but wildly prolific. And then by the time that you are like physically assaulting people, they're just like, yep, that guy's crazy. Everyone knew it. Right. And there's not a lot of anything that comes from it. But I mean, that was still relatively, that's not, you know, it was 20 years ago, I guess, when that happened, but it was, I guess it has to be within a little bit sooner than that for people to think there's real consequences about it. Because like, I don't see, like, let's say this stuff that Manitoba is being charged with ends up being true. you know, there's, especially in today's climate like that, there's not going to be a, you know, well, he's a crazy punk rock biker guy. Like, that's not going to happen. It's probably going to sink them.
I don't know if it'll sink him, just because I think most Dictators fans, like, aren't too involved in modern politics, if you will, you know? So, I mean, I think he might not ever get, like, press and magazines again, but I don't think it'll hurt his image within core Dictators fans that much, to tell you the truth.
We'll have to see. So, in any case, that just came up today. So, final story that we want to talk about here. There is a cover of the Seeds song, I Can't Seem to Make You Mine, that we posted today. And this cover was by not only a handful of Philly bands, but a handful of Punk News Summer Soiree veterans, I guess. What do you want to call them?
Veterans, good. I would say champions. VIPs.
Yeah, so John, what's going on here?
Oh, this is cool. So Crazy and the Brains, who are from Jersey City, just recorded a cover of the Seeds classic, I Can't Seem to Make You Mine. It's also a duet of Jade of Posers. Of course, Posers has broken up now, but Jade is co-vocals on this track. It's being released to support their upcoming show with World Inferno in Jersey City on this Saturday. So by the time you hear this, it'll have already happened. But this is cool. I dug this. I thought it was really neat how they took the garage rock tune and kind of went back to Crazy and the Brains' original roots, which was kind of like folk punk, sort of. But they kind of gave it like a goth sheen. Fun fact, Adam White just this week became a huge Bauhaus fan, and I approve of that immensely. So this is a cool track. I'm excited to see what Jade's going to do next, because Posers have broken up, so she's kind of doing her own solo thing now. And Crazy and the Brains have been working on stuff for the past year, so I think it's really time for both of these acts to really go to the next level and break out and do exciting stuff, and I am pumped.
I like this a lot, and it's, I mean, it, I'm just coincidentally exploring a lot of this 60s kind of like garage psych stuff on my own time here. So, I mean, they're covering a Seed song. I was, you know, just earlier in the week, I was listening to like the Lollipop Shop and some of these Fred Cole bands, and, you know, stuff that is in that realm of like the stuff that you'd have gotten on like a Nuggets compilation or a Pebbles compilation is very interesting to me right now. So to hear these bands come out and, you know, cover one of those songs is quite cool.
I have not been able to get into Crazy in the Brains despite John's constant telling me I need to, you know, and it's one of those things because of the way they work, I can only take them in kind of small quantities. I got to say, I kind of like this. You know, I grew up in Wisconsin. I'm a Violent Femmes fan. This reminded me of the Violent Femmes. Maybe I will try to give them another listen. I know that their typical stuff is a little more bombastic than this. So I'll try again, John. I'll try again.
He says wearily. All right, John.
I am where it's late, dudes. It's late. It's bedtime.
It is. John, play us out here. If anyone wants to send us any mail, and we will read the mail on next week's show, podcast@punknews.org is how you do that. That's what I got. If anyone wants a Some Party sticker to affix to their local bar, email me and I'll send you one. But outside of that, John, what are we going to play?
Let's play Crazy in the Brains and Jade covering the Seeds. Let's just do it. This is Crazy in the Brains and Jade doing I Can't Seem to Make You Mine, available at crazyinthebrains.bandcamp.com or something like that. Check it out.
Can't you see what you're doing to me? You fill my heart away. This has been a Velour Underground production. I am Greg Simpson, producer of this podcast. Hit me up if you want me to mix, master, or produce your podcast, even from afar. Or, you got a band you want to come record with me in scenic Lafayette, Indiana? Let's do it. Hit me up at greg@velourundergroundstudios.com.